This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. The Peoria City Council meets tomorrow night in hopes of working through an impasse over the 2022-2023 biennial budget. The main roadblock has been finding a solution to filling a $4 million gap in funding public service pension payments after the council voted earlier this month to end the public service pension fee. Among the possible solutions proposed by City Manager Patrick Urich is using sales tax revenue from this year to cover the pension hole over the next 2 years. In a conversation with reporter Joe Deacon, Peoria Mayor Rita Ali says the sales tax money came in much higher than the city manager's conservative projections.
So that's a very good sign, I would say, of what's to come. It gives us an option. I hope that we will consider. It's one of the options on the table. One of the various options that we have, of course, is cutting expenses. And we know that cutting expenses means cutting staff. That's not one of my preferred options. We've had, staff that have worked really hard throughout a very difficult time. And I anticipate with the new infrastructure bill that we're going to be hiring many, many new employees because we're going to be short-staffed. You know, with our new capital investments that we're going to have over the next 2 years, we're going to need employees.
Ending the pension fee not only created this current $4 million gap over the next 2 years, but there's also the long-term obligations of $360 million that has to be fully funded by 2040. How can the city address those future responsibilities?
Well, so we really have to work with our state General Assembly, our state elected officials, in trying to find a long-term solution for this situation that has us fiscally strapped, quite frankly. You know, one solution that many are looking at across the state moving forward for additional 20 years, the amortization of the pension. So that would actually give us some relief. Then I know that, people say that's kicking the can down the road. However, we are strapped. You know, if we don't make some additional provisions, we won't have resources. And it's not just Peoria's problem. It's a problem across the state and certainly across the nation as well.
The city intends to restore a fire engine that was cut last year and to hire 30 more police officers. How do the budget delays and the pension obligations impact those plans?
I think that there's a unanimous consensus that we don't want to cut any police during this time of record homicides and, increases in violence. I think that it's also important that we maintain our core services, and that includes code enforcement as well as firefighting personnel. So it presents a challenge, again, that we have this pension liability, but we're not going to stop paying our bills. We will continue to pay at least, even more than the minimum that's required by statute. But without the public pension safety fee, we're not able to pay as much as we have over the last few years.
What are the potential ramifications if the budget delays linger?
Well, there have been rare times when we went almost up to the Christmas holiday and getting a budget approved. We have to approve a budget before the end of the year, whether that's cutting expenses, which I hope that we don't go that route, or coming to some compromise. I'm just really confident that our budget will be approved on Tuesday before Thanksgiving. I hope that's the case, and I'm just optimistic that we can come together as a council and work that out for the people of Peoria.
You mentioned the violence that's gone on all this year when you were talking about funding the police. At the recent Chamber of Commerce Thanksgiving luncheon, several of the speakers were talking about increasing volunteerism and mentoring for young people as a way to address the gun violence. What do you think of that approach, and what other approaches can be taken?
I think that that's one of the community-based solutions, that we should definitely increase the volunteerism. There was a group, I think it was out of Pennsylvania, there was a father's group that got together, and they went into the schools as fathers and role models and mentors for these young people. And they're really seeing a difference, a change, and they're beginning to provide direct mentoring. We need that. That's one of the gaps that we've identified. We've actually identified all the mentoring groups in Peoria that can assist with gun violence prevention, gun violence reduction. So I think it's a matter of identifying all of our resources that can contribute to gun violence reduction and connecting them. And that's what we're doing with the Safety Network, or SNET, is bringing together all those resources, whether it's mentoring or after-school tutoring, whether it's programs that wrap support around social-emotional needs of young people, because we're seeing a lot younger people getting a hold of guns and being involved in the violence.
That's Peoria Mayor Rita Ali speaking with Joe Deacon about the city's need to pass a budget that maintains public safety services. This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi, and coming up in 6 minutes, Tim Shelley digs into the economy's inflation woes with Bradley University economist Colin Corbett. This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. The Southside Community Center offers a wide array of services from GED completion to childcare to free meals. The organization has also helped 5 families move out of public housing and into market-rate rentals. In a conversation with WCBU's Hannah Alani, Pastor Irene Lewis Wimbley says her mission is to help South Peoria families become self-sufficient.
We can see a vision of our families being able to buy something for $8,000-$10,000. We invest $20,000 and they can walk away from this house with $30,000 invested, pay it down within 15 years, and have the equity and savings to be able to maintain it and flip and buy something bigger and begin to acquire wealth and acquire generational wealth, which has been denied in this red line, historically red line district.
Your mission here is connect, grow, serve. What do those words mean?
When we talk about connecting, we have our ways to connect, ministries that we connect with the community, and we go to them often, like taking a meal to Harrison Homes on Thursdays and doing our outreach block parties and just using those opportunities to build relationship. When they're ready to grow holistically, we offer what we call the Pathway of Hope. Grow opportunities. So whether they're coming to a mom's group, parent support and education, or our leadership academy, we are offering them the pathway of hope to grow in more intentional ways of learning the skills they need to be self-sufficient. We are raising up families and helping them get to a place that they're turning around and now able to serve. I feel like we're really winning when folks are on their path, and then they're turning around and helping someone else get connected.
How did your 11 years in social work shape your perspective on community development?
I was given the experience to work for a system of care grant for children. It was a 4-county system of care, highly rural. One of our counties only has, Carroll County, has one stoplight in the whole county. But we have issues like with a suicide and substance abuse and mental health issues, just like they do in Chicago. It's crazy. But so working and doing more with less was my job, and getting folks to work together and eliminate silos and go on projects and do things and serve together was my job. So I bring that here as well. So I speak public health, I speak juvenile justice, I speak healthcare, medical home, and education has its own lingo. So that has helped me find out who the players are very quickly.
Can you tell our listeners a bit about some of the families that you've helped get housing outside Harrison Homes?
Ooh, my favorite thing. I gush when I talk about our mamas. We have moms who have 2 kids or 1 child, and we have moms that have 7, and also other family members' children often. One of our first moms is such an inspiration to me. Met her at dinner church, and she was at the rock bottom of her life. Her significant other had went to jail. She had had a car accident, totaled her car, left with 3 kids, and was pregnant. So desperate. What am I going to do? But begin to believe, what do you want to do and dream about? I want to be a nurse. So got a job in housekeeping at a nursing home, looking into CNA classes. And because of her care and her personality, she has moved up the ranks in housekeeping and hospitality and is now a supervisor. So she is not sure where her path is with nursing, but she does know that she's in fair market value housing and does not want to let her children think that this is the end either, and has goals to become save to buy her first home. Our second mom, one of my favorites as well, helping her move out of her apartment and the Harrison Homes out of PHA. She wasn't able to control her heat. Both of these moms have pictures now of them adjusting the thermostat at their apartment. The issue is there's no housing stock on the South End. I have three of our volunteers that have purchased homes in the last 3 years are now homeowners paying taxes. And only one of them were able to find a house on the South End.
What is the best way our listeners can help you do what you do?
Come down and help us build off ramps and be in relationship with somebody, a family, invest in them and make it a lifestyle. We can see an entire community be transformed in less than a generation. But I know that that's not feasible for everybody. The next best thing would be to go to our website and give. We'll be able to purchase necessary things that we need to be able to hopefully build a building, but also build indigenous leaders and provide job opportunities. We are dreaming big. If you are interested in housing and know about housing, how do we begin to build a group of folks who can invest their time and begin to flip houses? If we can build a tax base that of homeowners, we can literally change the budget at city council to be able to have money for roads, have money for the schools. My challenge is for folks to see how the church especially can reinvest in places that have seen the effects of the injustice, de jure, segregation, and laws that have kept Southside in this position.
That's Pastor Irene Lewis Wimbley speaking with WCBU's Hannah Alani about the services offered at the Southside Community Center.
Republicans won big in Virginia just a year after the state swung for President Biden. Some voters there say it's time for Democrats to get more aggressive.
They're too busy playing defense and trying to be nice. Because this culture war is not going to end because you refuse to participate.
How can the party recover ahead of next year's midterm elections? On the next morning edition from NPR News.
I'm Ariel Jones. Listen weekdays from 4 till 9 a.m. on 89.9 WCBU and WCBU.org.
This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. The Federal Reserve is tapering back on its COVID-19 stimulus measures to rein in inflation in an overheating economy. Tim Shelley speaks with Bradley University economics professor Colin Corbett about how long higher prices might linger.
They're definitely trying to stop sort of juicing the economy quite as much as they had been. But tapering is different from actually sort of putting on the brakes. So for the past year and a half or whatever, the Fed has been purchasing treasury bonds and real estate assets, which means that they are sort of taking these bonds into their portfolio and then giving out cash in return, and so they are effectively sort of increasing the money supply, and they've sort of had a plan for doing this, how much every month in these assets that they're going to purchase and thus increase the money supply. And so just recently they announced that they're going to sort of taper off these asset purchases over the next 10-ish months, which will lead to a slower increasing money supply and hopefully thus less inflation.
Because the inflation is something we see right now with a lot of things. The gas, we talked about cars a little bit. It's just, it seems like everything is so much more expensive.
Yeah, and so there's two competing schools of thought on that. Some people think that this is sort of pure transitory inflation. The main thing that's causing it is supply disruptions due to the pandemic. So and somewhat non-pandemic things like the chip shortage, which isn't just from the pandemic, but at least partially so. And also gas prices are determined by global energy markets. And so energy prices, not just gasoline, are much higher all over the world. So there's very little that the Fed can do to affect energy prices. And there's very little that they can immediately do to, say, increase car production or increase port throughput, which is another issue. If we just have these sort of supply chain bottlenecks and constraints, if that's the only cause of inflation, then there's not a whole lot that the Fed can do about that. And many economists believe that, again, the primary causes of inflation are these supply chain kinks and bottlenecks.
So this move by the Fed is not going to perhaps solve all the problems overnight.
Right. It's not going to bring down gas prices. That's just not within the power of the Fed. But on the other side, there are some economists who believe that what we're seeing is actually demand-driven inflation. And that just people have too much money and they're buying too many things and straining not just sort of these specific supply chain bottlenecks, but our sort of entire supply chain. So we're seeing like overall labor shortages, and we're seeing sort of factories running at capacity and even being strained there. So if that is the cause of inflation, if there's just too much money floating around that people have to spend, then yes, this Fed tapering and other policies that the Fed could eventually use, those would have a potentially greater effect on inflation.
Is that what we're seeing with housing right now? We've seen the housing prices. We've seen people get in the bidding wars over houses almost, where they're going way past their standard market rate.
Yeah, so housing is one of the areas that the Fed can influence the most because demand for housing is very much dependent on interest rates. So if people can get a good deal on a mortgage, they're significantly more likely to try to purchase a house. Whereas if interest rates go back up, then buying a house becomes a lot less attractive. But also one curious thing about housing is in terms of it affecting inflation, housing prices don't directly influence inflation. What they use is so-called imputed or occupied imputed rent. So it's like how much would you have to pay to rent your house if you were renting it, which is certainly related to housing prices, but not sort of directly correlated with them. And so when we see housing prices shooting up, but rental rates not shooting up quite as fast, then inflation isn't affected quite as much. Just like because the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is the people who publish the inflation numbers, they regard housing prices as an investment rather than a consumption good. So they don't look at stock prices. They don't look at sort of like heavy factory machinery and part of their consumer price index.
Yeah.
So fun little aside. But
when we talk about the interest rates for a second, I mean, they've been held like near zero basically for this whole pandemic, which induces right. People go spend it because you're not going to make any money saving it.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Yeah, and that especially means that people are more likely to make big purchases that are dependent on interest rates. So things like cars and houses, also potentially like appliances or like home improvement projects, all of those things that are dependent on interest rates, yeah, we've seen demand for those shoot up. And so if interest rates were to go back up, then yes, we would expect demand for, again, those big things like housing and cars and appliances to come back down. For other things, though, like gasoline and vegetables and sort of just consumer goods, those are clearly not quite as affected by...
I know it's generally a topic that many people look at and they're like, this is incredibly difficult to understand, and it is. So
I guess as one sort of personal bit of advice, inflation has not been... inflation has been concentrated in a few specific areas, and you can potentially change your purchasing habits in order to avoid inflation. So don't buy a car now. Wait, and if you can wait to buy a car, you can wait until prices stabilize.
Change your habits, basically.
And that is sort of the whole point of prices.
Yeah.
Prices are a signal about what goods are scarce right now, or what goods and services are scarce right now, and what aren't. And so allow your habits to be changed by prices.
That's Bradley University economics professor Colin Corbett speaking with Tim Shelley about rising prices linked to inflation. Thanks for choosing All Things Peoria on WCBU. I'm Daniel Musisi. We had story help today from Joe Deacon, Hannah Alani, and Tim Shelley. You can find all of today's stories at WCBU.org. That's also where you'll find links to subscribe to the All Things Peoria podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or NPR One. And we want to know what you think of the show, so comment on our Facebook page. We're Peoria Public Radio. Or follow us on Twitter at WCBU Radio. This is WCBU Peoria, 89.9 FM, and WCBU.org, a public service of Bradley University and Illinois State University.